Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
I think the writer at The Athletic has the single toughest job of anybody, Rob Beertemple. Rob, welcome.
How you doing, Steve? I don't know if it's the single toughest. It has its moments.
Well, maybe you're going to have some moments. We'll see. I mean, so they've started to bring the kids up. So I'll start with this. Jim Bowden sent Ben Cherington a text and about, hey, this is exciting. Cherington evidently, because I heard him tell the story, sent back an emoji text, and it was of a turtle. So it's slow. Okay. And Bowden said, hey, 2 years, I think you got this going. Okay, so in 2 years, can they have this going?
I kind of figured even coming into this season that the window, if it's going to creak open, probably 24 or 25 is a reasonable expectation for that. They've made a lot of moves bringing up the kids this year, but it's interesting when you look at it. A lot of them have been moves, and I kind of alluded to this here, Dan, in my story that they've made moves with the kids, but it's out process kind of moves.
Yeah.
It's not, Cruz is the first big guy that you think, well, this is a piece, cornerstone piece going forward. He's really kind of the first one that come up. Sawinski was a surprise, and they're going to need more of those, but he's exactly what they need. He was a guy that they brought up thinking he'd be here short term, fill a need. Reynolds was on the COVID IL at the time. And he's just, Sawinski has looked pretty good. His average, some of the numbers are still a little low, the power is there and he's looked pretty good in the field. So he stuck around. Other guys that they brought up, you've got Cal Mitchell, those kinds of guys. And you wonder, are they really long-term everyday players? Maybe, maybe not. And that's kind of what the Pirates are figuring out now before the window opens or before it's due to open. This is the time you can kind of experiment a little bit, probe a little bit and figure out just what you have, what kind of role would this guy fill down the road if and when some more of the bigger pieces. I was talking to producer before I came on about Leover Peguero.
Yeah.
He's a guy you would figure is a piece. He's a, he's a cornerstone, whether it's a short or second or whatever. He's not here yet. They gave him a little taste. Then they set him down. They kind of did the same thing with Swagger. They gave him a little taste, kind of get that awe factor shaken off. And then maybe when he gets back, that won't be a consideration. You have already been here. And that's one less hurdle to have to clear whenever he finally does get back up, presumably for a longer run.
All right.
So short answer, yeah, kids are coming. Longer answer, yeah, but it's still not the kids. It's still not the big guys.
Right. So let's start with Cruz playing shortstop. Is it important in some ways for the Pirates to let him get it out of his system to play short, to play shortstop? And then maybe he shows them he should be, but at least let him get him out of his system and give him the shot?
Yeah, I think, coming into this year, I would have said that he's going to be an outfielder. And the sooner they can get that done, the better. And talking with some scouts who saw in the minor leagues, it wasn't like he was actively fighting the Pirates on becoming an outfielder or playing in the outfield, but it clearly was something he is not interested in. I can put it that way.
Right.
And at this point, it goes back to a guy like Sawinski. Before you really didn't know what you had with him. Wasn't on the 40-man roster, was still a double A. Then he kind of hits a little bit here. And now you're thinking, well, maybe now this is a piece in the outfield in the future. So maybe your outfield mix doesn't look quite the same as it did back in April, March. Same thing with a guy like Mitchell, with a guy like Swaggerty. If those guys really can be everyday players out there, then there's less of a need to move O'Neill Cruz to left field or right field. And maybe he does stay there. If he does stay there, it's not the end of the world for Leover Peguero. He can still play second base.
Right.
And he's a guy who can flip-flop. He and Cruz, Cruz could have a day off. Cruz could DH. Cruz could go on the outfield a day or two here and there. So there'd still be plenty of opportunities for Baguero at short. But again, they're looking for what are our options in 2024, 25. And that's the kind of stuff you find out now.
Right. Yeah. Get it out of your system. See what you, I mean, and see if it, you know what? O'Neill, you're right. You can play short. We've watched it every day. You're wrong. You're going to the outfield. So something like that. You watch, obviously he's naturally gifted, no question. Do you get any read? Because you know, when you're at double or triple, you do go through full seasons. So you do have to make some adjustments. But the sophistication of the analytics on this level of hot and cold are precise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, have you heard whether he's the kind of young man that can adjust? Or is there one way that he has to go about his business?
I think that's still kind of to be determined, especially at this level, because you know at this level, adjusting to the pitchers at double and triple A is one thing, because there is movement of guys up and down because you get different levels of ability, frankly, you know, and up in the big leagues, the level of pitching that you get is going to be a lot more consistent, and it's going to be consistently good. And just the pressures of and the grind of a day-to-day kind of thing in the majors is different from those same kind of things in the minors. In the minors, you're trying to claw your way up, which is one thing, but trying to stay. I mean, you know, as Clint Hurdle always would say, there's no higher level. You don't go up anywhere from here.
Right.
So I think we still – that's kind of a thing that they need to see. That's why, you know, getting him here at midseason, you know – it would have been nice probably to see him early in the year, but I think we all know a lot of what goes into the thinking of keeping him down.
Yeah.
But, you know, but this way, at least you get a sense of, you know, of getting him through that and seeing how he responds. So far, from what I can tell so far, I don't think he's a guy who's going to be fazed by that.
Mm-hmm.
He really does seem to have kind of a natural joie de vivre out there. And that really, you know, that can carry you through some of the valleys that you go through at times.
They had, I don't know, 11,350 for the first game he played. They then had 11,292, so they lost 58 people in the second game he played. They had 14,000 last night. There doesn't seem to be the initial, I can't wait to go out and see these guys play. Now, is it just because it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or is it something else?
Well, you know, I was thinking back to when I started covering this beat, Andrew McCutchen was still a guy in the minors who everybody wanted to see.
Yeah.
And I remember asking Dave Littlefield every year in spring training for a couple of years, no, not this year. Is this the year you bring up? No. So there was all that hype and suspense, and then McCutchen got to the big leagues, and I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I would wager that the crowd likely wasn't all that huge when he made his debut in 2009, I want to say it was.
Right, yeah.
And there was, you know, and I've seen the debuts of Starting Marte, that happened in Houston, but, you know, Polanco, Tyone, Gerrit Cole, all these guys, you know, Pedro Alvarez, remember that saga, getting into the majors. And then they get there, and you think, oh, they're going to have 30,000 people. No. 14, 12, you know, it's, I think some of it is there's a group of Pirates fans. Pirates fans have been conditioned to always be looking 5 years ahead at the kids in the minors because that next wave is going to be the one that puts us over the top, baby. And they've also now kind of grown accustomed to treating, I think, the Pirates as like, well, do we go to Kennywood Park today? Do we go out to a nice dinner, or do we go to the Pirates? You know, it's not a thing the way that going to, you know, Heinz Field for a Steelers game is a thing, or the way that for those maniacs who drive 200 miles on Saturday mornings to go from Pittsburgh to State College is a thing. You know, it's just not that way with the Pirates. So I'm not surprised. I mean, I figured, you know, when I did write that, yeah, maybe give them a little attendance bump. I think it's something we'll see maybe an additional couple of hundred or so over the course of a month or two or three. You know, people, yeah, I'll go see this kid. But that first night, that first, it just, I was covering the Pirates when Steven Strasburg debuted with the Nationals.
Yeah.
And that was like a national holiday in D.C. The national TV was there. This place was sold out. It was an event. It was a thing. It was a happening. It just isn't that way with the Pirates.
Okay, so now let me bring up the hidden question.
All right.
And that is the lease at PNC Park, I believe, runs out in 2030.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that is correct.
I believe you're right there, yeah. Yeah, 30-year lease, correct.
If there is, if there's no expansion, so in other words, Nashville, Portland, others are in play, are the Pirates in Pittsburgh in 2031 if things don't change?
Good question. That all depends, or a lot of that depends, on the guy who owns the team. And good luck trying to crawl inside his brain.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
He's a guy who, you know, the way the owner strikes me, when I think about Bob Nutting as the Pirates owner, I don't necessarily think of him as a guy who knows a ton about the game so much, or maybe even particularly doesn't like baseball per se. He strikes me as kind of a guy who, you know, he talks about it in the way you know, if you own something, you know, your favorite pair of shoes, you know, I like this pair of shoes better than the other one because they look nice or they're comfortable. But, you know, if there's a better opportunity out there, if there's a market that's demanding it, why wouldn't you think about it at that point if you're Bob Nutting? Because catch fire, let's say, in 2025, things come together and they do what they did back in 13. I still think the people in Pittsburgh don't expect it would last, and I don't think it could last. I think we're always going to kind of be in this cycle of they, you know, they build up a little bit and they build up, and maybe there's some setbacks or maybe some planets align and unicorns dance on the face of the earth and boom, they're in the playoffs. But it's not going to be there for long. And eventually people will just be like, all right, now we're looking at it. Let's take the kids down Kennywood again today. Instead of, so if you're Bob Nutting, you know, when you're out of that lease situation, why wouldn't you think about it? Now, you know, the world could be vastly different in MLB in six, seven, eight years. So who knows?
Well, see, that's why I strongly feel that something would benefit. It's quick cash for baseball if they were doing it. It would be like $2 to $2.5 billion an expansion team. But two expansion teams and taking two markets out of play would benefit the fans of Pittsburgh a lot. Just to take it off the table. But because, look, I think Pittsburgh baseball fans have proven to me that if you give them something, they'll support it beyond words and turn out in droves. So, I mean, they've proven that to me. The problem is you got to have somebody cooperate with them.
What was one of the biggest storylines out of that game a couple nights ago when O'Neill and Blind Madras made their debut? It was that there was a squirrel on the field.
Yes.
Steve, there was a squirrel on the field. I don't know if you heard. It was exciting.
I saw it. I know it caused some confusion in the broadcast booth for a moment because the fans were cheering. And then they finally realized they weren't cheering for the ball club.
Right. So I see that, and I think to myself, you could say, you know, it's not a good baseball town. Well, maybe to a degree. I just think that's kind of sports in general now. It's the shiny object.
Yeah.
And even if it's something in the stadium that's not at all related to the team on the field, it's a shiny object. And, so, you know, I don't know if that bodes well or not for the future of the sport, but there's probably something there to be to determine.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the other kid that came up with O'Neill Cruz, who's, he made a nice play in right field.
Yeah.
You know, he's contributed. I think he's hit a home run.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. What do you think of him?
Blind Madras is a guy who, you know, he was one of the, you know, it was funny. The way that Ben Sherrington described him was with an organizational win. He was a guy who looked like just a guy, when he was in the minors. You know, he was good player, solid player, not flashy, not somebody who was ever in those top 30 lists, you know, that they put out of prospects and all that. He was just a guy. But he was a guy who just kept playing well and kept playing a little bit better. And there were some people in the front office, some of the coaching staff, development staff, who, you know, to use the old baseball phrase, were pounding the table for him a little bit. Like, hey, look, this guy just sticks around. And we, you know, we say, well, that's good, but can you hit for more power? And then he hits for a little more power. Well, that's good. Can you boost your average? And he boosts his average. And that's great, but can you play better defense? And he plays better defense. So, you know, I love to see guys like that because they're, to me, that's, you know, that's baseball. That's,
yeah,
that's sport. You know, that's the kind of thing you want to see, is a guy who, you know, he could make a nice living in the minors or just getting by or whatever, but he just kept kind of grinding. And now look at him. He's, you know, playing every day pretty much in the big leagues. You know, we'll see if it lasts or not. But at this point, great story, great kid. You know, seems to have a really good head on his shoulders.
Yeah.
You know, had his uniform number 66. We were kind of joking that, you know, maybe next year they give you a real uniform number. And he's like, oh, dude, I don't care. I just have a big league uniform.
Yeah,
care.
Good for him.
So, you know, 66, pretty good number to have in Pittsburgh, too. So
yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. If you get the kind of production that 66 had, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
I've always been one that the vast majority of time when you take an established player and you deal them for, quote, prospects, I always feel like 80 to 90% of the prospects are, I'm sorry, but you got nothing out of the trade. That's me.
Yeah.
That's me. Now, obviously, they got Brian Reynolds in the McCutchen trade.
Right.
O'Neill Cruz is for the old State College spike, Tony Watson. can Cruz's success be a validation of dealing an established player to a contender for a prospect? Can O'Neill Cruz validate that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's kind of when Neil Huntington pulled the trigger in that trade. Because, you know, Waddy was a... It was a pretty important piece of a really good bullpen, and you know, and he could pitch. Any bad thing that ever happened with him is when they tried to make him a closer, and it just didn't work. But any other job you wanted him to do in that bullpen, he would do it, and do it really well. And so it hurt a little bit to part with him. You know, they were taking a piece out of the program, and they were taking a big gamble with Cruz because, you know, he was big and rangy, and the Dodgers originally wanted him at third base, and then he threw the ball all over the place a little bit, and just, you know, then they had some better fits at third, so they moved him to short, and he still threw the ball all over the place, but you could see some stuff there. But who knows, can you tease it out of him, or does he just become a kid who throws the ball all over the place and is burned out, you know? Yeah. And kudos to Neil, to Huntington, for pulling the trigger on that one, and to the, you know, the development staff. And they've really, I think they realized that he was a guy that if you rush, he's one of those guys too, I think a poster boy for don't speed him along too much.
Right.
You know, because there were a lot of rough edges there, really rough edges. And there was some maturity he had, you know, had to go through, and some, you know, smoothness to add to his game, and just some savvy he needed to get. But there was enough to build on there that they could afford to wait and really try to mold him into something special. Yeah, and if he clicks, even if he becomes, you know, doesn't have to become a Hall of Famer for it to click. He could become a very good everyday guy. He could become an all-star.
Sure.
But either way, I think, yeah, this is one of those times when you say, whew, all right, that worked out pretty well. You know, sometimes we're kind of hasty to, you know, judge trades. I mean, you look at the Clay Holmes deal. That looks so good. This right now, does it?
Right.
But who knows, you know? And, right. And for every two or three of those, it's just totally blow up in your face.
Right.
For every Chris Archer deal. Oh, did I really say that?
Excuse me. I think some knives need to be removed from backs. Oh, because the problem with that is you didn't. You twisted it just a little bit.
I know. I still cannot. Yeah, I'm still having a heart. You know, I'm not even really I can't imagine as a fan how a fan would, but as a guy who covers the team, you shake your head.
I know.
That's
where they went away from the formula and they got burned.
Yeah.
They got burned.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I mean, you know, I think there was also a case of maybe people in the owner's office maybe pushing for something, anything, because I think they underestimated the backlash of trading McCutchen and Cole.
Right.
And they said, you know, go do something. And they did, and they shouldn't have. But, oh, well.
Oh, well. Always a pleasure. It's always great to talk with you, Robin.
Oh, yeah. Hey, tell McGloin and Hannafin that I'm a big, big fan of Pay Dirt.
Every Thursday.
Every Thursday, yes, indeed. So, I subscribe to the pod, and I enjoy listening to it. So, give those guys my best, man.
I will. Absolutely. Appreciate you, Rob. Hope to see you soon.
Will do, man. Take care. Talk to you later.